Hello, this is Gregory Novak. This is The Cunning of Geist, episode 21. Welcome back. Please follow me on Twitter and on my Facebook page at Cunning of Geist. This episode, I'm going to add a new dimension to a dichotomy we've been discussing in several of the previous episodes. It is the notion of the divided brain and all what's related to that. Left brain versus right brain. We explored this in detail in episode 10 and how this notion relates to Hegel's understanding, which is Verstand in German, which is a more linear thinking, versus reason, Vernunft, which is more holistic thinking. Obviously, the left brain, right brain terminology was not around in Hegel's day, but we have since seen that it really corresponds to what he was talking about here. However, the new dimension that I'll be adding is that of a visual orientation versus an audio or oral orientation. The visual being more left brain oriented, the audio being more right brain oriented. So let's get into it. I will be discussing this concept as it was expounded by the Canadian philosopher Marshall McLuhan. He specialized in media theory, and his works were very highly celebrated in the 1960s and 70s. I will also be relating this to Hegel's philosophy, in that obviously the world Hegel inhabited in the 19th century bears little or no relation to the world we inhabit today. So does Hegel's ideas and thoughts, philosophy, still have relevance today? We will discuss. First, some background on Marshall McLuhan. His first book was titled The Mechanical Bride, and it was published in 1951. And in it, he coined the term, the medium is the message. You've probably heard that, for which he became famous. The premise here is that the form and effect of the medium itself has greater impact on society and culture than the actual content of the medium. For example, television itself as a new technology was a bigger disruptor than actually the material that appeared on the television shows. And that was a pretty breakthrough concept at the time. His next book was called The Gutenberg Galaxy, The Making of the Typographic Man. Gutenberg obviously was the person that invented the printing press. This book was published in 1961. It elaborated on the themes in the first book and took them much further. In it, McLuhan traces communications all the way back from the written alphabet up to the printing press and then on to the current world of electronic media, and how each step dramatically affected our cognitive organization, and which in turn then has profound effects on social organization. McLuhan basically sees each technological advance as an extension of one or more of our senses, bodily parts, or functions. Let me quote from this book. If a new technology extends one or more of our senses outside us into the social world, the new ratios among all our senses will occur in that particular culture. And when the sense ratios alter in any culture, then what had appeared lucid before may suddenly become opaque, and what had been vague or opaque will become translucent, end quote. So new communication technologies can have a profound effect on how we organize our thinking, and this then will have a profound effect on how we organize our world. McLuhan puts particular emphasis on the rapid changes brought about by the printing press. And what this did was dramatically quicken the transition from an auditory oral culture to a visual one, from a right brain orientation to a left brain, from reason, Vernunft, to understanding, Verstand, from holistic thinking to linear divisional thinking. Referring to the book Prints and Visual Communication by William Ivins, McLuhan states, I quote, in this passage, Ivins not only notes the ingraining of lineal sequential habits, but even more important, points out the visual homogenizing of experience of print culture and the relegation of auditory and other sensuous complexity to the background. The technology and social effects of typography incline us to abstain from noting interplay, both in our inner and external lives. Print exists by virtue of the static separation of functions and fosters a mentality that gradually resists any but a separative and a compartmentalizing or specialist outlook, end quote. Hence, the domination of left brain, divisional, separating thinking growing stronger as a result of the printing press, getting much stronger. McLuhan also, in speaking to this advance of print technology, he notes that it dramatically changed the whole world, bringing in what's called the modern period. This includes individualism, democracy, and nationalism. And for McLuhan, these trends were all related to print technology's principle of, quote, segmentation of actions and functions and principle of visual quantification, end quote. Once again, this is the dominance of the left brain that Ian McGregor talked about in The Master and His Emissary that we talked about back in episode 10. And this move clearly changed society and culture. But at what expense? We'll get to this. But first, McLuhan famously said that a fish does not know it's in water until you take it out of water, meaning that we are often blind to the background environment that a new medium creates. Now, of course, Hegel was there as part of this modern world, and he wrote books and philosophy in this visual left-brain dominating world. But as we've discussed often, he was not blind to the holistic thinking of reason, Vernunft. We covered this as well in episode 10. And it's noteworthy, McLuhan states that it is only the artists that can see the current environment for what it is. And not just musicians or painters. He states, I quote, "I think of art as its most significant as a DEW line, a distant early warning system that can always be relied on to tell the old culture what is beginning to happen to it. The artist is the person in any field, scientific or humanistic, who grasps the implications of his actions of a new knowledge of his own time. He is the person of integral awareness. The serious artist is the only person able to encounter technology with impunity, just because he is an expert aware of the changes in sense perception. The artist is always engaged in writing a detailed history of the future because he is the only person aware of the nature of the present," end quote. As McLuhan said, the artist can be in any field, and certainly Hegel can be considered an artist in that regard, and that he clearly saw that over-relying on the common understanding of Verstand was not providing the true full picture. It was the map and not the territory. However, we are not done with this story at all. It's about to get very interesting. In the early 1960s, McLuhan foresaw and correctly predicted the coming electronic communications revolution. He wrote that the visual, individualistic print culture would soon be replaced by what he called electronic interdependence, when electronic media replaces visual culture with an oral culture. In this new age, humankind will move from individualism and fragmentation to a collective identity with a tribal base. Here he coins the famous phrase, the global village. And this was in the early 1960s, remember. McLuhan claimed that when the Russians launched the first Sputnik satellite in 1957, the first to orbit the Earth, that this event rang the bell for the beginning of the global village. As an aside, I remember as a young boy going out at night with my parents and looking up at the sky and watching Sputnik go by. It would flash. The newspaper told us when it would occur so you could go out and see it. It was very thrilling. We could all sense something very big was happening. Regarding the global village, McLuhan states, I quote, "Instead of tending toward a vast Alexandrian library, the world has become a computer, an electronic brain, exactly as a piece of science fiction," end quote. And again, this was the early 1960s, 30 years before the internet came around. As an aside, McLuhan also coined the phrase surfing back then as a way to jump around a body of documents or things. His next book was published in 1964. It was called Understanding Media, The Extensions of Man. It's probably the book that's most quoted in terms of what he was saying. This was followed by a book called The Medium is the Message in 1967. Not message here, but massage. As the medium is what is really working you over, giving you a massage, so to speak. In these works, he brings up the concept of rear view mirrorism, another important McLuhan point, in which we think we're looking ahead, but actually we're seeing what has gone by. We're looking right into the rear view mirror, and we're not seeing into the future, we're seeing the past. And this is very similar to Hegel's famous quote about the owl of Minerva only taking flight at dusk. We don't really understand what is happening until after the fact. So there's agreement here. McLuhan's War and Peace in the Global Village was published in 1968, where he interestingly traces technological advances in warfare. And he cites the invention of the stirrup as being a huge advantage in warfare. And many scholars cite the metal stirrup as the reason behind Genghis Khan's conquering much of Russia, China, the Middle East, and Eastern Europe in his lifetime. Obviously, the bow and arrow, guns, planes changed everything in warfare, culminating in the atomic bomb, which McLuhan called an exclamation point at the end of the history of warfare advances. He published a book, From Cliché to Archetype, in 1970. And then finally, which was published after his death, The Global Village, Transformations in the World, Life, and Media in the 21st Century. Here in this book, he gives a much more complete account of the differences between visual and acoustic space. Visual being a linear, quantitative, classically geometric model, and acoustic space a holistic, qualitative space. McLuhan states, quote, acoustic space has the basic character of a sphere whose focus or center is simultaneously everywhere and whose margins nowhere, end quote. Kind of reminds me of the Hegel's circle of circles that he talked about. Now, this brings us to a key distinction of this new global electronic network. We are becoming tribal once again. Yep, tribal. McLuhan sees three distinct phases of history. The first is the oral acoustical tribal world inhabited by non-literate sensory people, where there was direct involvement, shared experience, and little individualism. The second phase, the visual world, is brought about with the invention of the alphabet and later put in full speed with the invention of the printing press. People were now entering a literal, visual, detached, and fragmented world. Reading is private, and this led to less social bonding and more social isolation. Now the individual was the king, not the tribe. The individual then, of course, has rights in a democratic liberal state, and you can see so much of the focus on the rights of the individual in the various constitutions that appeared later on, the U.S. Constitution and the French Revolution and elsewhere. This then brings us to the third wave, which is the electronic revolution. This started with the telegraph and brings us fast forward right up to today's internet, which in a sense means the distance no longer matters. The revolution has had a profound effect on everything, whether we see it or not. And we now can have total and instantaneous involvement in the lives of others all around the world, as did the original tribal setting. That's why they call it a global village, and that's why we're returning to a tribal orientation. Let me quote McLuhan from an interview he gave with Playboy magazine in 1969 regarding tribalism. The electronically induced technological extensions of our central nervous system, which I spoke of earlier, are immersing us in a whirlpool of information movement. The aloof and dissociated role of the literate man is succumbing to the new intense depth participation engendered by the electronic media and bringing us back in touch with one another. But the instant nature of electric information movement is decentralizing rather than enlarging the family of man into a new state of multitudinous tribal experiences. Particularly in countries where literate values are deeply institutionalized, This is a highly traumatic process, since the clash of the old segmented visual culture and the new integral electronic culture creates a crisis of identity, a vacuum of the self, end quote. And this identity crisis is crucial, and this is what's going on now. This results in the individual losing their own self-identity and needing to identify in a tribe to find their identity. A community used to mean people that lived close by, closely together. If you moved to a new town, you would look for people with similar interests, i.e. a church, synagogue, mosque, perhaps a club organization, sporting organization. Today, the community can be worldwide. Our Hegel study group on Facebook has over 24,000 members all over the world. This is today's community, and there are many such groups and communities. But further, and this is what's somewhat disturbing, this search for identity with tribes can also be violent. Not necessarily physically violent, although it can be, as we recently witnessed at the invasion of the United States Capitol building. McLuhan defines it as violence that is simply an identity quest, private or corporate, social or commercial. To give a better feeling what he means by this, let me quote McLuhan from a 1977 TV interview. The host asks, "It seems, Dr. McLuhan, that this tribal world is not friendly." McLuhan answers, "Oh no, tribal people, one of their main kinds of sport is butchering each other. It's a full-time sport in tribal societies. The closer you get together, the more you like each other. There's no evidence of that in any situation we've ever heard of. When people get close together, they get more and more savage, impatient with each other. The global village is a place of very arduous interfaces and very abrasive situations." End quote. This is exactly what we are seeing with the rise of identity groups across the globe today. Tribes. Citizenship to a country is becoming more of a tenuous thread because territory is no longer really important. Distance does not matter. It is the community or communities one belongs to find an identity that are important. And these identity groups are in direct conflict with governments, as we discussed in the last episode. How does a government meet the needs of all people and not just the group now in power? And this has profound implications. Let me quote from an interesting blog I found called beyondeasy.net. This was written in 2015 on McLuhan. I quote, "The social organism of the detribalized West was the nation state. The rise of European nationalism was a direct consequence of the printing press. The nation state and the liberal democracy are social configurations whose emergence was concomitant with the mass production and proliferation of vernacular print matter and increasing literacy rates. Languages became standardized across ethnic zones, expanding regional identity to national identity. Literate culture reified the notion of the individual, which is a prerequisite for any consideration of individual rights. Today, electronic media is undermining the social organization of print culture. The loose ties of citizenship are increasingly superseded by the stronger and more exigent bonds of digitally connected and reinforced subgroups. The polarization of politics is merely the surface effect of tribalization tectonics." John Chipman, a Vermont Supreme Court judge in 1833 stated, "The assumptions of early 19th century democracy can be particularly expressed as the secular sanctity of private opinion and free speech. Central to these are the distinctions between thought, speech, and action." Back to the blog. "Remember, the theoretical framework under which a liberal democracy makes any sense was devised prior to the proliferation of electronic media. To the Gutenberg mind, actions can be sanctioned, but thoughts cannot. Saying something is not the same as doing something. In the emergent tribalism, this is no longer the case. In the new tribalism, thought, expression, and action are identical. Indeed, we've arrived at a point where words, a passage or sentence of triggering material, an assertion of a contradictory or negatory ideology are no longer simply rude, offensive, or contentious. They are violent. To the pre-digital mind, this is preposterous. To the digital native, it is obvious. So when much of our total selves has been angelized as discourse to a sphere composed of discourse, Any discourse that would undermine the discourse that we are or the discourse that our friends and allies are can be nothing but a real attack, end quote. So in other words, free speech is no longer accepted. Free speech and thought is no longer accepted if it goes against your tribe's credo. It's seen as a violent attack. And it can lead, as we've seen, to actual violence. And this is a key result of our online communities. They bring us identity, group identity, which we see slipping away with the demise of the print culture and the individual. We discussed last episode how Hegel foresaw this tension between groups and governments and suggested that it needed to be worked out in the future. He would have no idea what was in store in the move to the global electronic village, but he did notice the emerging problem nonetheless. So social media today has become our reality. If you go on vacation and you don't post pictures of it on social media, have you really gone on vacation? That's a big question today. Today we need these identity groups on social media to feel real. Also, interestingly, the use of memes to replace words is part of this new world. Literary grammar is no longer necessary. Tribal pictures are more expressive. They are tribal symbols of belonging. Now, finally, one last point. McLuhan has an interesting point of view of the new tribal culture. In the Playboy interview, he says the following, quote, "The visual world in which points of view and goals make social change an inevitable and constant byproduct, an electrically imploded tribal society discards the linear forward motion of progress." So what he's saying is, in the old visual world, social change was inevitable and was constantly being done, but in the new electronic tribal society, there is no linear forward motion or progress. Whoa. Let's just stop for a second. This could clearly be taken as saying that the new tribal world is not progressing at all and cannot progress. And this actually harkens to the end of history hypothesis that we've discussed here that Kojev brought forth with respect to Hegel. But this is very different than Kojev's end of history and Fukuyama, who we've also discussed. It is not that liberal democracies will prevail and will end our history of conflict. This is what Kojev was getting at, Fukuyama. No. It's that the new tribal culture will make forward progress obsolete. However, the end of history does not jibe with McLuhan's view of the process that's going on here, nor does it jibe with Hegel's, for that matter. And we've covered that in detail. And I should also mention that Francis Fukuyama, who published a book on the end of history based on Hegel and Kojev, he's now turned around in his most recent book was called Identity, and it's speaking to this very issue that we're talking about, that these identity groups are now more important than the governments, and it's a problem that's going to have to be worked out. But as I just said, McLuhan didn't think things would just end now that we're in the tribal, electronic tribal village. He clearly saw a process that was going on, and he called it his tetrad, which is a pattern of transformation seen in new technologies. In the Laws of Media, which was published after his death in 1988, he proposed a four-part way to view any new technology. The four parts are, one, what does the medium enhance? Two, what does the medium make obsolete? Three, what does the medium retrieve that had been obsolesced earlier? And four, what does the medium flip into when pushed to extremes? A key thing here is that any new medium will eventually overheat and then it reverses into its opposing form. Let's look at the computer as an example of McLuhan's tetrad. All right, the computer. One, the computer enhances production of information. Two, it made hard copy information obsolete. Three, it retrieved the alphabet. And four, when extended, it created the internet. So now you have the internet. One, the internet enhanced the dissemination of information. Two, it made standalone computers obsolete. Number three, it retrieved the community. And four, when extended, it created the World Wide Web. So now you have the World Wide Web. Number one, the web enhanced visual and graphic display. Two, it made email obsolete. Three, it retrieved the isolation of the small village through social media communities. Four, and these are just possibilities because this is where we are now. It may be extending itself into cyber attacks, bullying, fake news, and disinformation. But we won't know until after the fact and when the Owl of Minerva takes flight. The similarity of this tetrad, of McLuhan's tetrad, to Hegel's dialectic was noted in the journal Etc. in 1977 by one Paul Levinson. I quote, "This categorization bears more than fleeting resemblance to Hegel's dialectic and may be thought of as a modern multidimensional update of Hegel's more linear system. Like Hegel's, McLuhan's laws postulate a cyclical evolution of human processes." In a letter published after his death, McLuhan had this to say about Hegel. Quote, "Hegel simply flipped out of Hume's visual determinism into acoustic subjectivism. All of their followers are still under the illusion that the acoustic world is spiritual and unlike the outer visual world, whereas, in fact, the acoustic is just as material as the visual," end quote. Well, I'm not so sure this is so fair of McLuhan, given Hegel's acknowledgement of both the understanding and the visual realm and on the other side, the holistic reason. Hegel saw that both are clearly needed. And, you know, McLuhan was a media scholar. He wasn't a Hegel scholar. So we'll perhaps give him a pass there, but it's an interesting take nonetheless, and I wanted to share it. So the global tribal village is not the end. We will continue to innovate, to enhance, to obsolesce, to retrieve, and to extend. And as we've said before, McLuhan said that all media are extensions of us. So no matter how complicated the technology, it will always harken back to us, to one or more of our senses, one or more of our bodily functions, our emotions and thought capabilities. And this means that anybody in the past that also related back to a human being, their thinking will survive. And this certainly goes for Hegel as well as all the greatest thinkers. And there may be improvements, obviously, but again, it's not creating something else. It's all fundamentally just extending our own selves. And there's so much here. I hope to cover a lot of this in future episodes. So that's a wrap for this one. And let me just say, please, if you find benefit in these podcast episodes, please tell your friends and in your various communities on the web about it. This is Gregory Novak. This is The Cunning of Geist. Thank you so much for joining us. Please follow me on Twitter and Facebook @Cunning of Geist. See you next time.